Two solid hours of nothing but surf rock, surf guitar. That was the Centurions doing the Bullwinkle Part 2. Before that, the Fireballs doing Bulldog. And I'm going to leave you with Tex Raylor's Doomtown and the tune We're Doomed from the Battle of Bunker Hillbilly. That is self-released from Tex Raylor's Doomtown. That'll do it for the Wrecking Hours this week. Stay tuned next week for the All Surf Radio. And we have Parent Connection coming up next on the Monday Talk Forum. This is the original WHFR talk show, produced and recorded here in WHFR Studios. Parent Connection happening next after Tex Raylor's Doomtown. Here you go. Catch me next week, same time, same channel.
Way. With a wide variety of courses to choose from, let HFCC guide you on your path through education. Classes begin June 26th and continue through August. For more information, contact the Office of Registration and Records by calling 313-845-6403 or online at hfcc.edu.
Thanks to improved home energy efficiency, the average American home uses 40% less natural gas than it did in 1970. But as a nation, we can improve and continue to reduce our carbon footprint. I'm Chris McGill of the American Gas Association. No matter what kind of heating, ventilation, and air conditioning system you have in your home, you can take a few simple steps to save money and improve your home's energy efficiency. Reduce your overall energy use by up to 30% by replacing furnaces and boilers with high-efficiency appliances. Use a programmable thermostat. Set it lower in the winter and raise the dial in the summer for significant savings. And use your landscaping to your advantage. Trees and shrubs are a natural way to cool your home and reduce your bills. And finally, sealing any drafty doors or windows will reduce your home's energy use. Now is the time to make the changes to make your home more energy efficient. For more tips, visit aga.org.
A message from the American Gas Association.
Henry Ford Community College gift cards are a great way to show your support for someone in your life who is seeking the skills necessary to fulfill their dreams. Available in values from $10 to $100, gift cards can be used towards payment of tuition, purchasing books and supplies, lab fees, or even a lunch at Skylight Cafe. Gift cards can be purchased at the campus bookstore or online at collegestore.hfcc.edu. College gift cards. What better way to encourage a student in your life than with an investment in their future?
The WHFR Monday Forum. An hour of a wide variety of one or more talk show programs from 6 to 7 p.m., some of which are locally produced.
Today turns into yesterday, leaving only words we say for this time.
New ideas and information, different each week, not available on other Detroit stations. That's why we're the station making waves, WHFR.fm. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to whfr@hfcc.edu.
The good times, the hard times, this time is our time.
The WHFR Monday Forum, 6 to 7 p.m. And also listen to all locally produced talk shows on WHFR Tuesday Forum from 1 to 2 p.m. Disclaimer, this show is a WHFR talk show presentation. The opinions expressed by WHFR staff and our guests are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College, not faculty, staff, administrators, anyone on our board of trustees, or students.
Teach your parents well. Their children's hell will slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry. So just look at them and sigh, and know they love you.
Hello, welcome to Parent Connection. I'm Margaret King Ahmed, and in the studio tonight is our guest, Carol Lauer. And Carol Lauer happens to be also a friend of mine. Welcome, Carol.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, Carol is an educator, and she has taught elementary school grades 1 through 4. She's a reading specialist and a reading recovery teacher. She's a trainer of a literacy coach and has done that 14 years in Dearborn. She is a currently DPS district intervention teacher and literacy coach at Maples Elementary School. And so thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule, Carol. This means a lot to us. Out there, parents are struggling with what to do and how to handle, you know, our struggling readers, and that is our theme for today. So let's start with this. Let's begin by just talking about literacy. You know, what is literacy? What, you know, when should we start thinking about literacy as parents for our kids?
Okay, well, this is my favorite topic, and I love everything to do with literacy, which is reading, writing, speaking, and listening. And actually, a parent should start thinking about how they respond to their child from the time their child's first born. It's that first word, the first hug, the first sound they hear from you that's actually communicating, and it's part of literacy.
So even the goo goo gaga stuff, right?
Right, yes. Even that. And parents are, without a doubt, the child's first and most important teacher they're ever going to have in their life.
Okay, and so one of the greatest gifts that they can give, obviously, to the child is, to value lifelong learning. And so first we want to establish that the parents are the first teachers.
Right.
Okay, all right. What does the research show?
Well, research shows that children whose parents read to them from a very young age, from the minute they're born, even some people read to their child in while they're pregnant. They play music for them, they read to them, and so it's this. Having this experience of literacy is going to prepare your child for school.
Okay, so the literacy relationship between the parent and the child should always be personal, and pleasurable, right? So reading and writing will be viewed as a comfortable and pleasurable for kids as they get older. Now, earlier we heard from Jay Cornick, who said that at a very early age, and he is our staff advisor here, he mentioned that his mother read to him at a very, very early age. And as she read, she would use her hand, her finger, and, you know, identify each word as she was reading it. And he said that he became an early reader because of that. Is that true? Is that somehow how print gets transferred to kids?
Yeah.
And understanding of reading?
Right. Because having someone read to you and showing you how books work, which is what we call concepts of print, and like what is the front of the book, what is the back of the book, where is the picture, what does the picture tell us, where are the words, where is the print and the message. If you are with your child reading from a very early age, that is just so natural to them. They are going to pick up all the cueing systems that, and they're going to be able to unlock the key to reading because you've given them those experiences. Where is the print? Which way do you go? And, you know, the directionality, picking out familiar words that they'll see over and over again in print, making books with your children and writing and using their name in the books. All of these things are going to develop a love of reading and writing from a very early age, and it's just they're going to absorb it naturally.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's really kind of how parents can encourage their children to read and write. So we do find that, I mean, are you understanding and based on your experience and knowledge that reading and writing do go hand in hand, or is it possible for kids to really learn to read and love reading and not make the same connection with writing?
Well, I think what we're finding in schools nationwide is that reading and writing should be at the same level, reciprocal. But what we're finding is that children usually have a higher level of reading and their writing skills are not up to par with their reading. And so you wonder, well, why is that? I think even in the homes, parents read to their children more often, but they don't think about writing with their student or their children. They don't think about having the child, even from the time they're a toddler, even if they're scribble writing, say, what would you like from the store? And they say, ice cream. And then they scribble on the paper. But as long as they can read it, it's ice cream. They take the paper with them to the store, and the mother says, what did you want? What is on your list? And they can read ice cream. So it's starting at that very early age to encourage the writing. And in school, what we're finding is that many teachers are readers. They're naturally readers, and they have a love of reading. Many teachers are not writers. And so they feel more comfortable during the day and teaching the reading. So for that reason, we're having teachers write more often, keep journals themselves, and we're trying to help the teachers with how to actually have a format for teaching writing that's going to help the students so that we can get the reading and writing on a more even par.
Right. It's a marriage. It's a real mm-hmm. marriage. So do you think that technology is going to hinder or help? Because, you know, we do have a lot of in our technology, in our using the computer and Facebooking and Twittering and doing all those things that people do, there's a lot of abbreviation. Words are shortened, you know, kind of like we did with shorthand with secretaries a long time ago. Maybe they still use that. I don't know. But how is that going to play a role in us encouraging writing with our children at home?
I don't know. I really think if a parent starts early with a child, reading to them, writing with them, making up lists, cooking with them, talking about what they're doing, all the things that you do to develop literacy from a youngster on. If the parent talks to them and they talk to them in complete sentences, it's research shows that it's only about 15 minutes a day that a parent actually talks to their child. And most often it's commands like, you know, come to the table, clean up your room, turn off the TV. That is not going to help a child for reading and for writing. Parents need to talk in complete sentences in a regular language, whether it's English or their home language, whatever language it might be. It's the discussion and the complete sentences and the flow of language that's going to help the students. And if they have a good foundation of reading and writing, then the technology, they'll be able to handle the fact that there's abbreviations. But if they're only going to hear, if they don't have that rich background, then it's going to be more difficult for them.
Right. And I think even in our television programs, things are shortened. You don't get a full structure, a full sentence structure all the time in a lot of the dialogue, even in some of the shows that we see on television. But you brought up an interesting point, because we talked about, you know, you have to do it at an early age. It's mm-hmm. not something we can just wait till kids are in school. We want kids ready for school, so we have preschool preschools now offering and even early start programs, Head Start and whatnot, teaching kids the print, you know, identifying print concepts. What can you just review again what those print concepts are and what our parents should really be looking for? I think this is it's worth repeating, you know, like the back, the front and the mm-hmm. back and all that. Can you just go over those real quick again?
Right. When you're working with your child and you're sitting together and you have a book, then you want to talk about, this is the front of the book, the back of the book, the spine of the book, the title of the book. So even a very, very young child can point, well, where's the front of the book? They should know that at a very early age. And then you're going to talk about the pictures, where the pictures are. You're going to talk about where the words are. And then as you're reading, you're going to actually point to the words as you read them. And the child then can see that you're going from left to right, that you have the return sweep, even though you're not using that terminology. They're going to discover at a very early age then how books work, and then have the child turn the page, the whole idea of turning the page, so they understand going from front to back. And that's early concepts of print.
Okay, holding the book right side up, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. Okay, yeah, that's helpful. What are the different stages of reading? And then I'm hoping that you'll explain to the listeners what we might see in those stages of reading.
Okay, there's four stages of reading. There's emergent, early, transitional, and fluent. So emergent is your preschool, kindergarten stages, and that's where they are learning the early concepts of print that we just talked about, how print works, directionality, the return sweep, one-to-one matching of so that when children first start reading, they usually start by inventing. And then as they learn some of the words that we call high-frequency words that you see over and over and over, like I, a, the, am, is, then they start to monitor their reading, because if they know the word is and they're inventing and they're pointing and it's not matching what they know with what they're inventing, then they start to say, oh, wait a minute. And they start to monitor. That's how they learn one-to-one correspondence.
Well, can I just ask you then, do many readers have a natural stopping point where they should pause and check themselves for meaning when they read? Or that definitely, that's what's established early on in those preschool years and stuff like that, that mm-hmm. we go like this, stop, and then we come back, and then we go back and check ourselves to see if we understood what happened and kind of recite what happened on the page?
Well, part of it is natural. I mean, it's natural in that they can speak in a complete sentence. Now, you have some students that have a low language level. They do not speak in complete sentences. They'll just say, go store. And of course, that develops as they go. You know, a two-year-old might talk that way, but you don't want them talking that way as a five-year-old. So it's the whole idea of speaking with your children in complete sentences and encouraging them as they are developmentally ready to also answer in complete sentences.
Oh, I like that answering, that's great. So that's emergent.
All right.
And then who's next? What's
emergent,
next?
I mean, so you're going to start with some high-frequency words in emergent. We talked about the book, how books work.
Can I just ask then, for maybe people don't understand what high-frequency words are, so can you just give just an example of that?
Okay, those are the words that you see over and over and over again in books. I, am, is, mom, dad, the, so these are the type, was, were, so the words that they're going to see over and over again. They have to know those words when they're reading. They shouldn't even think about those.
Okay.
Otherwise, that's going to slow down their reading and meaning is going to break down.
Okay.
So we have emergent, and that is really goes through basically through kindergarten and then maybe the beginning of first grade. After that, it's called the early stage.
Mm-hmm.
And here, now they already understand the basic parts of reading, one-to-one correspondence, directionality, return sweep, some high-frequency words, and now they start to learn to decode the words. So in other words, they're going to look for chunks they know. They have letter-sound relationships, so they can look for parts of words they know and push through when they come to words that are more difficult for them.
Okay, so they're pushing through as they're sounding it out?
Right, sounding it out. Mm-hmm. But sounding it out in chunks.
Okay.
So if I can say something to parents who have, like, first graders, second graders, having them sound out every letter is an ineffective way for them to learn to read. Because, for example, if you wanted dinner and you went d-n-n-er, you're never going to come up with dinner. So, if you know the n and you go din, and they know the er, then dinner, then they can push through the word using chunks.
And that, to me, seems like that's a good segue into even learning how to write, you know, with spellings correctly and those kinds of things. All right. So is there any more on the early stage?
The early stage is all where they're learning to focus on words. They're coming to words they don't know, and they're learning how to problem solve on words. And then they go into the transitional, where now you're getting into multisyllabic. And transitional level usually starts, I'd say, around second grade.
Okay.
So then you're getting in the transitional level. They can read longer text. They're starting to get into some chapter books, early chapter books. It's moving from the decoding now into putting all their thoughts together, and they're able to problem solve on words. And then next is fluent. And once it's fluent, fluent is an adult reader.
Okay.
So fluent readers, it's usually at third grade level from then on.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. There are signals that indicate meaning is being constructed, and there are signals that indicate meaning is being broken down. What would be one of the signals you might see that would indicate that there's that it's being constructed, that it's happening? What will we see children actually do when they're reading? I mean, like visualizing the picture in their head, those kinds of things. Does that happen at all? They're asked questions for clarification.
Right, and if a child has meaning, that means if they make an attempt at a word and it doesn't make sense, they're going to go back and reread or do something to fix it.
Okay.
That shows you if they are making errors and fixing them so that it makes sense, that shows you that there's meaning happening.
So the retelling is part of that? They'll or paraphrase what it is that they've read. That'll help us know as parents that they understood what they read, right?
Yeah, a really great strategy
to
use with your students at home is after they read a page, then just check for understanding. Just say, okay, let's check for understanding. Tell me what happened on that page. If a child is having difficulty comprehending and they don't know what they've read, you have to take them in smaller steps. You know, don't have them read the whole book and then ask them. If this is difficult for them, then you want to stop after each page or each paragraph if it's a longer, an older student, and then say, okay, let's check for understanding. Like, who are the characters or what is happening now? Tell me the problem. Tell me the solution. But you have to take it in smaller pieces.
Okay, in little chunks like that. Okay, because then that would also give us the idea of whether or not the child has a breakdown of the meaning because they can't retell and they are struggling with the language itself, understanding in the sentence the particular word or phrase. So that's helpful. So go ahead.
And you're also going to know, like for a younger student, if it's not making, if they're not catching that it isn't making sense, if they've lost meaning, is there substitutions for words for the attempts? For the words they don't know, don't make sense. Uh-huh. You know, then as a parent, you'll know, oh, wait a minute.
Okay.
You know, we need to...
That's a red flag.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's helpful. And now, if a parent was really wondering what level their child was at, I mean, like, how do we use those soft, squishy bushes, books when we first start handing kids books, ones that make noise and all that kind of stuff? How, at the infancy stage, what would be some of the material we would pass to our child or give to our child to encourage the reading?
Well, as a very youngster, like you said, they have the soft books. The board books are great for the little ones. In fact, I just had my little six-month-old granddaughter, Charlotte, and we were reading Goodnight Gorilla. And, of course, she was turning the pages. She could turn the pages, and she could eat them, too. But as long as it's a board book, it's not going to hurt the book, and they're made for that reason. But they, so it's great to start from very early on with books that they can handle, even as a youngster. And they love looking at things and pointing things out. And then the board books, once they, can be more careful turning the pages, then they can go on to the other types of books.
Mm. And so I think also parents should be teaching the handling of books, even the proper putting away books when you're done reading them. And the care of books obviously should be one of the things that we teach as parents. I do have to do one little station ID, so let me do that right now. You're listening to WHFR.FM on your FM dial. And you can contact us at WHFR@HFCC.edu. That's our email address. And you can call us here at 313-845-9676. And we would love to hear from you and hear your concerns and comments and ideas. And if there's something, a topic that we could talk about here on Parent Connection that would be of interest to you, please contact us. Leave a message at 313-845-9676. And we'll do our best to make sure that we are meeting your needs right here at WHFR. We're making waves, so stay tuned and listen to all the great stuff that we have here for you on a daily basis and a weekly basis. So we're in the station here today at WHFR with my guest, Carol Lauer, who is an educator and a specialist, a reading specialist. And our topic today is our struggling readers. So we've just been giving some helpful information and tips to parents that are wondering and concerned about their child if they're going to learn to read or if they're struggling readers and how to help them in their adventures in reading and the foundation of reading and supporting them in learning how to read and enjoy it and love it so that they go on to be lifelong learners. I'm trying to figure out where we want to go next, Carol.
Oh, well, I would like to say that when you talk about laying the foundation for your child's literacy, reading to your child and talking to your child are the two most significant factors in ensuring success for your student later on in school. So coming back to conversations, like when can you actually have to think about and structure time for conversations? And in the car is a perfect place because they're like a captive audience. So during that time, you can talk about their day, events, world events, friends, books that they've read, books you've read. These conversations that you have with them, or maybe at bedtime or at mealtime, is another great time where they're there that you can talk. These conversations are going to not only enrich their language ability and their level of language, it is also going to give you that bond and make your relationship that much closer. And you're setting yourself up for rich conversations as they grow older. They're used to discussing things with you. They're used to having time to talk. And that will come in handy when they're older students.
And it is risky sometimes, don't you think, to have conversation with an adult or another person. So I think when you're in a family setting, it diminishes the risk factor. You know, you can feel comfortable where there's no real put downs and there's no sarcasm and there's no making fun of someone who didn't say something right or used the wrong word, or, you know, there's an easy way to embrace the child's efforts and support them with a lot of love, obviously, and knowledge about how to do support and build that foundation of reading. So that gets me to this point. What about our reluctant readers?
Okay, well, for the reluctant readers, often they're reluctant because they haven't had success. And they become more negative and they don't have a good self-concept or self-esteem about their ability to read. So most important, again, is reading to the student, finding books that interest them. You know, what are they interested in? Sports? Are they interested in cars? Whatever it might be, you're going to have to find out what excites your child. And then read to them. It needs to be very pleasurable, as we said before, conflict-free. So if your child needs reading help, often a tutor is a good idea because you take away the emotional side of it. I know that I've tutored for years, and parents, there's much that parents could do. However, they get too upset then. It's like, well, I told him once, why doesn't he get it? And so you have the friction. So sometimes for a reluctant reader or one that has reading difficulties that actually needs extra help, you might want to think about tutoring. But for yourself as a parent, it needs to be conflict-free. So reading to the student and then reading something, having them read the same thing over and over again is going to build up his confidence, build up his fluency. Keep it easy. You learn more when you're reading material that is easy to read. You do not learn on material that's difficult to read. So it's just like yourself. If you were reading a book and you didn't know 20 words on the page, you wouldn't want to read that book. So there shouldn't be any more. Even 5 words on a page is too, that they have to really work on is like too many. So if you have a reluctant reader, give them material that is easy to read. If they're an older student, find books that are written for older students but at an easier level. So once you build their confidence up, and then with some expert instruction, they will accelerate.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about, body language is important. Like you were talking about, you have them sit next to you or sit on your lap, depending on how old they are, and hold the book, the both of you hold the book. What about the environment, the setup for all of that? What can you kind of highlight what that might look like, or could look like, or should look like?
Well, you might want to have like a favorite reading spot. I mean, I don't know. I like to read in bed. That's mm-hmm. normally what I do, and probably my mother read to me in bed. Mm-hmm. Some people would rather be sitting up in a chair. So you just need to find what is most comfortable for you and your student and have that be your special place. And you're building up your rituals for reading, your place, your time, And also your materials, your books. Children need to have a lot of books surrounding them. Mm-hmm. It's a fact that in classrooms, the larger the classroom library is, the more successful the readers are in that classroom.
Wow.
So that would have to hold true for homes, too. The more books available, the more literature rich the child's experiences are. And it doesn't have to cost a lot of money. I know you can go to the library and check out a multitude of books. In Dearborn, you're very fortunate. You have a huge library on Michigan Avenue. Mm-hmm. They not only have books, they have movies. They have computers there that they can play with. They have puppets. They have stuffed animals. Mm. They have videos. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is so much there. They have story time. Mm-hmm. So a trip to the library should be a must on every parent's list of things to do.
Oh, that's a wonderful suggestion. And the lighting, I think, would probably play a role, too, when you sit down. What is the lighting like, the ambience there? And maybe even some aromatherapy might work, something that smells nice to keep a child calm and a parent, calm and de-stressed. Go ahead.
I know, I always like to eat. Now, I don't want to promote that because of the obesity in our country, and I certainly need to lose a few pounds. But I always like to read and eat. I don't know, it kind of goes together for me.
Well, you brought up an interesting point. No, that's interesting, Carol, because I was thinking as you were giving us the overview of setup for a successful reader, I was thinking about how once in a while I do see people plugged into music but are also reading. And I could never figure that out, how people can multitask like that. It happens, though. People are capable of doing it. Is that right?
Yeah, everyone is different. I know I always had the radio on when I was doing my homework, and it used to drive my mother crazy. But I was able to do it. Now, at other times, maybe I would have to have quiet. It just depends probably the purpose for reading and on your particular ability to concentrate with background.
Right. And I think even in our heads, sometimes we have a lot kind of brewing in our head as we approach our homework or approaching a book and we're going to read. And sometimes I kind of get it. It's like, listen to the music, turn out the babble in the head, and the music is really just kind of a tone to get you kind of settled so that you can pay attention to what you're reading. So that's kind of interesting. Go ahead.
It's interesting how you talk about the atmosphere, because it's all this, what they're doing in schools now is making the classroom more home-like, and they're having the table lamps and the pictures on the bookshelves, the books on the bookcase. If they're suggesting that teachers go to the library, or not the library, but the bookstore, to see how they display books, to make the display attractive to children, and bringing in the rocking chairs, bringing in the carpet, because at home they have that wonderful feeling of being enveloped in love and reading. It just goes together. So they're bringing that into the classrooms. And that's what they try to do at the bookstores. They want you to walk into their bookstore and feel warm and comfortable and enveloped.
Yeah, it's cuddly, like a stuffed bear or something, right? And that's kind of fun, because then I'm thinking about your comment about how you like to read in bed, and I'm thinking, well, if in the classroom they're bringing in the pillows and the blankets, I guess that's how you would establish that kind of a routine of learning to read in bed, because that's when you're most comfortable and the day's turned off and you can concentrate on what you want to concentrate on. I have just a couple announcements. We need to take a little station ID break here. WHFR-FM.FM, your non-commercial radio station at Henry Ford Community College, plays jazz, alternative indie rock, blues, hip-hop, big band, rockabilly, world music, classical, and soul. WHFR provides information that will expand your mind and local news that will keep you informed weekly. So stay tuned to WHFR.FM, your 24-hour radio station, keeping you connected around the clock with the most current musical vibes for your listening pleasure, making waves. Not WHFR, but HFCC, your Henry Ford Community College, is invested in you and your success. If you or someone you love are physically challenged, academically disadvantaged, or have learning disabilities, Henry Ford Community College Assisted Learning Services can provide eligibility services, personal counseling, academic advice, and information about admissions, registration, and graduation. They are located in the Learning Resource Center. For more information, you can call 313-845-9638 or go to www.hfcc.edu and click on Student Life. Your success starts here at HFCC. If you are tuning in for the first time here, you're listening to Parent Connection. I'm Margaret King Ahmed, your host. And in the studio with me this evening is Carol Lauer, who is an educator and a specialist, a reading specialist in the district. And we are talking a little bit about struggling readers. And we are here to help you figure out at home how to help your children, your young ones, even your youth, your older children, learn to love reading and embrace it for lifelong learning. Now, one of the things I'm thinking about here, Carol, is that I don't know what the percentage is now, but we have for years found that we were exiting kids from high schools that couldn't read. What do you attribute that to, or how does that happen, and how does someone mask the fact that they're illiterate or can't read all through school life up until the point where they graduate? I don't understand how that happens. Do you have any idea?
That's a really good question. Some are just very adept at being able to listen. And then they pick up enough from their auditory skills that they can get by in school. Sometimes they're passed on, but it's a shame for any child to go through school without knowing how to read. I mean, it is a shame. And there are different reasons for that. They fell through the cracks. There's programs for students that should pick that up. There may not be enough intervention or reading specialists to work with the number of children that need help. But it's so important. That's why I really stress starting from the time your child is born to encourage the love of reading, and reading to them is going to benefit them so much. And unfortunately, there are some children that have no books at home, and the parents have not read to them at all. And the average child has heard 1,000 books before they go to kindergarten.
Wow, 1,000 books?
Right.
Before kindergarten.
Right, and it could be, you know, children love to have books reread to them. They have their favorites, and it's really a good idea to read a book more than one time.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to have a new book every time, because every time you hear something, us or anyone, you pick up something different than the next time you've heard it.
Mm-hmm.
But so just think about the student that has not been around books and goes to kindergarten, and then you have a student in the same kindergarten that has heard over 1,000 books read to them, and they're very familiar with books and how books work. There's a huge gap there already.
Right, and that's why we have to have that differentiation in teaching in our classroom. We have to, because we will have that child that excels, and then we'll have the one that is the struggling reader, and we have to find ways to meet their needs, obviously, and support them in any way we can. And so this is really important, but there's a thought I have in my head that I want to share with you right this minute, Carol, which gets me to the point when I was doing my little PSA here for people that have anybody that is physically challenged or academically disadvantaged or have learning disabilities. What do we do for our like ESL students? And what, obviously we have a lot of bilingual students in this area in Dearborn. And I'm wondering, you know, what does it look like in a school, in a classroom, when you have ESL students? Will there will be some differentiation on how you're going to approach them or teach them reading. Is that right?
Well, sometimes, I mean, it actually probably takes a struggling learner, a child that has learning disabilities, and a child that is coming in as a non-English speaking
ESL.
Student.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
They will have, it takes 3 to 5 years for them to actually catch up. And this is with effective classroom instruction and then additional help by a bilingual person or by a reading specialist. They're going to need extra help. Usually it takes 3 to 5 years. And during that time, of course, you're pinpointing what their strengths are and you're building their strengths, and then you're working on what their next steps would be with the non-English speaking students or with the ESL students. Then there's a lot that happens in the classroom on oral language, you know, building up the vocabulary, building up the language structure. And children, what's interesting, though, is that children from a home that speaks a different language, if they speak to their child in their language in full sentences and have dialogue and discourse, those children then will pick up the English language very quickly.
Okay.
If they're coming to school with low language level, it's going to be very difficult, more difficult.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about semantics and syntax. How does that play into what we're talking about here in reading and learning to be a good reader?
As far as making meaning?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's what reading is.
Yes.
So, of course, we have the words, but the whole idea is meaning. You have to be able to comprehend. Even if you can read the words, but you don't know what it is, then you don't have meaning.
Okay. So real world reading, nonfiction opens doors to a life of learning. So could we even, you know, what I guess what I'm kind of hedging towards is I have noticed that a lot of books today, publishers are publishing books because kids are really, you know, they're bored to death with textbooks. They really, I think that small print of just all that information comes too concise, and the way it's presented. And I'm seeing a lot of books now today that are like, that are being published that are more looking like comic books, you know, kind of bringing the more to life with color, with, you know, the little bubbles like they do for comic books. And there's more in it, a little blocks of text, you know, side by side, like they do in comic books. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's going to encourage our readers and grow readers in this day and age? Do you think that that's a nice, incisive way to get kids to be more involved in what they're learning?
I don't think there is, you can't discount the rich literature. They need that. They need to hear it. A reluctant learner, if that is something that is going to appeal to them, then I say go for it. Whatever a child will read, whether it be a comic book or knock-knock jokes, I don't care what it is. If you have a reluctant reader, getting them interested in getting them reading, it doesn't matter. If that appeals to them, then let them read it.
Okay. Do you have anything to share with our listeners as far as teaching our kids the alphabet at a very early age, or the sounds of the alphabet, or, you know, can you just kind of expound on that just a little bit about the alphabet?
Yeah, I just read not recently about how important it is for them to sing the ABC song. I mean, as a youngster, that is going to help them. Rhyming words, just, I think there's so much merit in what I call incidental learning. Mm. I know with my children, when we went out to lunch, which I like to, here I go eating again, but we like to go out to lunch, and I brought with me in my diaper bag a laminated alphabet chart.
Oh.
And so it was a placemat, and I don't even know if you can get them anymore, but you could just laminate an ABC chart, and then we would talk about it. I'd say point to the dog, you know, we'd just use the pictures, and then pretty soon we were talking about the letters, and then we were talking about the sounds. So both of my children actually started reading before I even knew they were reading. So I'm sure it had to do with setting up that foundation. So singing the alphabet song, riding in the car, looking for colors. You know, there goes a red truck. So you can teach colors just by being in life. It doesn't have to be formal sit-down type of thing. Using their name, the letters of their name, and helping them, you know, before they go to school, they should be able to write their first and their last name. So there's a lot of incidental learning that you can do that's fun.
I love that. And then just that taking the opportunity every time you have it, when you're out and about, you're walking through the neighborhood or you're going to the store and making the list, the ice cream, I thought that was great. You know, the cereal, the cookies, whatever it is they're going to eat. Obviously, we do. I'm glad you talk about, you know, eating and reading together because, no, it is important because we you know, you do have to be healthy. You do have to feel like you have vitamins and nutrients to feed your brain so that you can function as a reader. So the reading and eating, it is important, and I do think that we should encourage our kids to eat healthy and well and drink lots of water and forego the pop and things that are going to just be more toxic in the system and kind of clog it up and block brain power. So I do think that's important. So writing the list and making the words and the incidental things, I think it really, really important. Riding the bike outside together, going on your camping trips or whatever it is, making the trip to the library. These are all wonderful ways to support and have successful, you know, reading in children that will read and love reading. I want to talk about one thing here, Carol. It says, I have a little sheet here that says ages at which certain sounds and speech normally develop. Now, I don't know how true, I think this is pretty true, but it says at age 3, the sound of the M, N, P, H and W should be a normal development for children at that age. And just correct me if I'm wrong anywhere. Age 4, your child should be able to know the sound of the B, the K, the G, and the F. At the age of 5, Y, N, G, and D, like yellow, onion, thank you, those kinds of things. Age 6, the L, T, at the SH, the blend, the SH, CH, and the blends, right? Like balloon, matches, shoe, blocks, glass. At age 7, they should know R, V, T, H, J, blends, slide, swing, spoon, stove, vacuum. At the age of 8, S, Z, and T, H. So, Carol, what are, for a lot of the younger kids, what are some of the real hard sounds to really manipulate or, you know, get their tongue around or their teeth and mouth ready for?
Well, now you're going into speech, which which is not my area of expertise. So okay. I know that there are certain ages, like you're saying, where they are developmentally ready to make certain sounds.
Okay.
And that if your child has speech difficulties, it could just be that they're not at the age where that's developmentally they're able to do that, and they don't need to worry. But that you'd have to take up with a speech teacher.
Okay. Well, you know, even as a teacher, you know, we're both in the education environment. And, I mean, there are kids in our classes that, you know, do have a lisp even or have some, you know, speech impediment and things like that. And it becomes even trickier for them to be readers because, you know, first of all, they're very self-conscious of, you know, the way they're speaking and the way somebody else is speaking. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you're at home and you have a child that is struggling with those kinds of things, I mean, first and foremost, get to the speech therapist or get to mm-hmm. a doctor that can help you with that. But what would be some of the ways to help kind of support them in their reading habits and developing reading habits so that they don't get hung up until, you know, their little, you know, whatever their speech impediment might be, gets corrected?
By just letting them read volumes of reading. And this is going to help them. If you are working with a speech therapist and they say, all right, they are ready and able to make this sound, please encourage them to do so, then you would, you know, say it correctly for them. But otherwise, you want them just to feel free to be able to speak the way they can speak at that time, and I wouldn't be correcting their speech unless it is something that an expert has said they're ready for this. This is how you would encourage them to make the sound, and then then model for them the correct way.
Okay. All right. That's helpful. One of the things that I was thinking about was, this idea of getting kids to write at home. I'd like just to talk a little bit more about that, because that does seem to be lacking for a lot of us. And I know you made reference to how some teachers even like to read and not write, or like to write and not read as much. And I know we really lead by example, obviously, and at home that's the case, obviously. So, well, again, let's talk a little bit about some of the other ways that we can get our kids to write, learning like the numbers and colors and things like that. So at a very early age.
Mm-hmm. Well, making books together is great.
Like that.
I love to do that with my grandchildren. And going to the zoo and then coming back and drawing pictures or writing about it, or having them, if they're very young, having them tell you about their trip to the zoo and you write it down and they draw the picture. So, and then lists for the shopping, writing, making up posters, or making tickets. Maybe they're going to put on a play and they're going to make write tickets. Anything that you can do in their play to encourage while they're playing to bring in the writing would be a good idea. Playing store, playing banker, playing whatever.
Oh, I love that, because I think play is very, very critical in a child's development and reading and writing and learning to, and embrace that. Play allows us to be risk takers, and we do want our young kids to be risk takers. Mm-hmm. And which also gets me to this idea of, some of us don't feel like we sing very well, but parents can sing and teach the lullabies. Right? Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, and also the nursery rhymes.
Nursery rhymes.
You know, we got away from nursery rhymes, and nursery rhymes, where they hear all this rhyming really helps you in reading. To go from, so if the word is partner, if they can do the chunks, which they're going to rhyme, say they know, let's do panther, or they know the word can. Well, then can they go to can to pan? Well, they have to be able to hear rhyming in order to do that. So hearing the nursery rhymes, there's lots of rhyming. Just riding in the car again and then coming up with rhyming words, rhyming with your name, whatever it is. So poetry and nursery rhymes are great for instilling the music of language.
Oh, I love that, music of language, because that's exactly, it is musical in some ways. Your twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder what you are. Up above the world so high, like a diamond in the sky. I mean, you can hear the musical sound in that. Mm-hmm. And then also using finger movements.
Finger plays.
The finger plays.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you would use your thumb to your index finger and for the little eensy beensy spider and mm-hmm. climb it up and go up to the sky, or the twinkle, twinkle, little star, the little fingers would kind of move back and forth up towards the sky. And I love that kind of stuff. I mean, I've raised 5 kids. You've raised how many kids now?
I only have 2.
But now
I have 3 grandchildren.
Yeah, congratulations. Yeah. That's so wonderful. We're both grandparents. We love it. But it is really amazing. I enjoyed so much singing with my children. I sang them to bed or sleep. I tucked them in. We'd sing songs to them. And we did the nursery rhymes, a lot of nursery rhymes. We loved the nursery rhymes. And then, the shows like, Sesame Street. Mm-hmm. That was one of the shows. They had lots of music on there, lots of rhyming. Oh my gosh, I have not watched children's shows since they were little, and they're like in their 30s now. So I don't even know what the new shows are, but I sure hope they're Sesame Street is still on, I believe. But they had 3-2-1 Connect, or 3-2-1 something like that, 3-2-1 Contact, that's what it was. And it was just like so much fun to engage with the people on the television, singing along with them, and it just empowered me. And I have to tell you, Carol, quite honestly, I was one of those struggling readers, and I don't know how I got through school. When I asked you that question earlier, Somehow I was able to mask it too. I think I read, but I wasn't really understanding everything that I was reading. And they actually had to bring in a reading specialist. And so I think that's why today I went off to become a reading specialist, because it meant so much to me that somebody made some contact with me and a connection with me to really stress how important it was to be a reader. So with all that said, I'm hoping parents are doing what they can.
Right. Please, parents, read to your children at home. Talk to them. If they are reading to you, encourage their reading. Talk about the pictures. Please don't cover up the pictures for your young readers, because they need those clues to help them. They're not going to be able, as a little one, to sound out airplanes. But if they see it on the picture, then they're going to, then that word is going to pop out because of the meaning. So talk about the pictures with your students in the book that they have. When they come to a word they don't know, have them look at the picture for a clue. See if there's a part in that word that they know. And then just tell them the word. You want it to be a pleasant experience.
Yes, and I want to ask you this question because, you know, my mother was an English language, she was quite tough on us all at home, but she mastered English language, you know, that was her love. And she went on to teach it and in the high school, and she was forever on our cases about the rules in the English language. Can you talk a little bit about that? Is that going to be more important for us at a young age or at a later age as a young adult or youth? Are the rules that important to us? You know, that you have to follow about language itself, about the I before the E or the E, you know, all that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. And, you know, that there's rules. Do we want to emphasize those rules as parents at home with our kids, or just leave that for the teachers?
Well, you know, what's really great is if they have enough experience with things, or they see, they'll develop seeing patterns. They're actually, I think, in school going more towards discovering the mm-hmm. patterns rather than just follow the rule. I don't know. I kind of like the rule myself. That's how it was for me in school. And I love diagramming sentences. I mean, who does that nowadays? But
that's what my mother used to do and teach. Yes, I can relate.
But now it's a discovery. If the child, like I said, if they know cat, then they can do flat, or because they know the pattern. If they notice that words with the EI, they kind of discover this for themselves, and they, I don't know, and it would be nice to have a kind of a nice mix of those for those students that can discover it that way and make their own deductions from that. And then maybe for the students that need the rule, that they can, that helps them, they can rely on the rule. So I think a little of both is good.
Oh, I like it. Listen, I want to ask you to share with our listening audience, and if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Parent Connection on WHFR.FM, and this is a program that is really for everyone, but we really hope to target our parents and help them out and give them helpful tips on best practices in parenting and help you build lifelong learners through building your children's experience with reading and other